Welcome to another edition of Sea Control, your moment of PowerPoint rehab from the Center for International Maritime Security. I am, as always, your semi-helpful host and director of online content at SIMSEC, Matthew Hipple. This week, we discuss naval development in West Africa, particularly the navies of Nigeria and Equatorial Guinea. I am joined by Paul Price of the NATO Council of Canada and former German naval officer Dirk Steffen of Risk Intelligence. In today's podcast, we take some time to discuss the challenges of building a state maritime security apparatus in West Africa, particularly the direction of procurement programs and their potential, issues with capabilities and training, and the challenges of private demand and public supply of maritime security. These gentlemen have written some particularly good pieces on Africa for us. Dirk has written two pieces, one on Obongame Express and the other on Nigerian maritime security forces selling their services. Paul has written a recent piece on Equatorial Guinea's naval procurement. All three of these articles are very worthy of your attention, and I invite you to read them after this podcast is complete. Paul and Dirk are just fantastic guests, and I know you're going to enjoy this one. We'll be right back with Paul and Dirk after this short break.
Hola, nuestros amigos. Do you like Sea Control? Do you enjoy the SimSec Next World blog? Become part of the discussion and our community. Sign up for SimSec membership at www.simsec.org/about/membership to get our articles and podcasts emailed to you every week, and an account that allows you to submit articles directly to our editors through WordPress. We think Sea Control is a very fine product, but it's nothing without your constant support and engagement. Your ideas keep us going. Now sit back and enjoy the show.
And welcome back to this week's episode of Sea Control on African Navies. I am joined today by Paul Price and Dirk Steffen. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you for having us. It's a great opportunity to talk about African Navies, definitely a growing role for them in maritime security. So it's a pleasure for you to bring us on.
And for those listening, that was Paul Price and Dirk, if you could say hello.
Yes, hello everybody. I'm Dirk Steffen and I look after Gulf of Guinea maritime security primarily for a company called Risk Intelligence, which is based in Denmark.
All right, now, gentlemen, before we start the show, Paul, you're the one closest to me right now, unfortunately. For anyone who doesn't know, it's 6 o'clock in the morning for me. For Paul, it's 4 o'clock in the morning. Dirk is a lucky piece of crap and is going doing this at noon over there in Europe. So he's the only one who's on the correct clock. So, Paul, go ahead, introduce yourself.
Sure. Yeah, Dirk's got his wits about him. I was a little rude and didn't introduce myself earlier, but I'm going to blame the lack of sleep. As Matthew said, I'm Paul Price. I'm currently the Center for International Maritime Security's Director of Social Media, but then over at the NATO Council of Canada, I work as a research analyst for the Maritime Nation Program. But the one that pays the bills is working as political advisor for the Consul General of Japan in Calgary. So I suppose kind of a strategic pivot to Asia, if I'm going to borrow some recent terminology, but still an interest in Africa.
The strategic pivot to Asia, if you're going to pay for this morning's coffee. Dirk, where are you from? What's your perspective? What do you bring to the table?
I bring to the table 12 years of experience in the German Navy, which is not at all related to Africa or African maritime security. I was trained a clearance diver in the German Navy, left the German Navy in 2000, then joined various security companies starting in 2002. Went out to Nigeria pretty quickly then and have been stuck in that region pretty much ever since. Focused on the merchant marine side of maritime security more than on the Navy's role. But since 2009, I've been working for Risk Intelligence, and there we take a slightly broader view of maritime security to include a lot more than piracy or the other issues that have to do with stability and economic security, etc.
All right, now three articles we're really looking at today. Two from Dirk, Obungame Express 2014, Together Forward Slowly, that's May 23rd of this year, as well as Troubled Waters, the use of Nigerian Navy and Police private maritime security roles, July 1st. And then Paul wrote an excellent article called, very simply, Africa's Newest Navy on July 10th about Equatorial Guinea. So those are the articles that kind of inspired this podcast. So Dirk, you've been on the ground there in Nigeria. Kind of describe the thrust of naval development in Africa.
I think the one thing you can say about African, or at least the Nigerian and West African navies, is that they are gradually actually waking up to the issue of maritime security. Historically, maritime security or even maritime power projection or navies have not played much of a role in African security, but as resource exploitation has moved offshore, and that is, of course, most pronounced in Nigeria, where we're seeing a lot of offshore exploration, oil and gas exploration, moving into the deep water areas of Nigeria, the interest in securing those resources as a part of wider economic security is becoming more pronounced. But of course, at the same time, like I wrote in that in my article, the capabilities still lag far behind the will to actually do something about improving maritime security.
And Paul, something that I noticed in your article in particular is, let's take a perspective here. So you have Nigeria. It's gotten two Hamilton-class high-endurance cutters from the United States. And you're talking about the Equatorial Guinea possibly trying to buy Osa-class missile boats, but also the Brazilian Barasso corvettes. Do you think that Africa's really starting to think, like we said, seriously about power projection, and to what end? Because these are some pretty high-end systems for countries whose main maritime issue seems to be piracy.
There does seem to be an ambition there, but I'm not entirely sure it's power projection, but just a desire to have stuff that looks really intimidating to a pirate skiff. So there's, of course, Equatorial Guinea's flagship that they unveiled at the start of June, and that was previously a Coast Guard cutter that had been intended for the Bulgarian Navy. Bulgaria introduced some really deep defense spending cuts, and so had this hole basically up for grabs. So Equatorial Guinea contracted a Ukrainian shipbuilder, had them jury-rig it, and it might work a little bit like a Gepard-class frigate, but no one's completely sure. You can see that it's got an AK-176 on its bow, but no one really knows if it's got ship-to-ship missiles, if it would sink itself, if it actually used its own weapons. So it looks nasty, but no one really can tell if this is actually something that we could solidly say is a new navy for West Africa.
With all this equipment and all these new procurement programs, what's the possibility that this is actually going to go anywhere? Nigeria's done this before. They've had massive procurement programs, and the ships have ended up rusting to the pier. Dirk, your article, Troubled Waters, really describes in detail how deep the problem may go with corruption, or maybe not even corruption, just confusion within the Nigerian Navy as to who its bosses is, where its money comes from, etc., etc. Is this just a flash in the pan? There's money available, we're going to buy some stuff, it'll rust, we'll buy some new stuff? Or as these new assets get bought, is this sustainable?
I think the temptation to buy sort of high-end military equipment is still there for many West African countries because, of course, it provides a source of enrichment for potentially for corrupt officers and politicians. But by and large, most African navies understand that their primary role is not going to be national defense. So they are not actually looking primarily at the sort of kit that would normally be turned out by European shipyards for European or American navies. In that respect, the Equatorial Guinea situation is perhaps a bit out of the ordinary. We have, of course, heard rumors, unfounded rumors, of the Angolan Navy wanting to buy a decommissioned Spanish aircraft carrier, which, of course, would have been a major joke, considering that that aircraft carrier would have needed a crew that would have exceeded the size of the entire Angolan Navy, the Angolan Navy at the moment operates a handful of patrol boats, small patrol boats, and that's it. I think the Nigerians have actually sort of set the direction by procuring these Coast Guard cutters, and I think that's already an indication of where they want to go. They also are in the process of procuring two Chinese-built OPVs, and I think OPVs are really the way forward in terms of kit for the African navies, because they can potentially do two things. They first of all address maritime security needs, and I would argue that the primary problem is not actually piracy. That is for many countries, even the most piracy prone and piracy affected countries like Nigeria or other Benin, Togo, Cameroon, sort of in the inner Gulf of Guinea. It's a secondary problem that arises from organized crime issues, and that's actually where most of the Coast Guard effort is being directed. Where it can all fall apart is training, maintenance, as you've indicated. Historically, a lot of these grand procurement programs ended with the kit rusting against the pier. When you sail into Lagos, you can still see the old Miko 360 type frigate, the Aradu, which I think hasn't moved in the past 5 years, and has possibly only moved about maybe a dozen times in her entire lifespan. But as African maritime security, genuine African maritime security interests emerge, I think there is a possibility for sustainable African naval programs, but they just need to make sure that they do not exceed the scope of coast guarding that is needed at the moment. Anything that goes beyond that prestige projects that involve sophisticated equipment are likely to remain white elephants in the near future.
So, Paul, that sounds like a bit of bad news or a potential some bad predictions here for Equatorial Guinea. What are your predictions on that end? Because that is a pretty high end series of equipment that it looks like they're trying to buy.
Yeah, sure. I think capacity building is going to be a major challenge. But even in terms of state institutions beyond the Navy, Equatorial Guinea has more or less been an authoritarian dictatorship for its entire history. The current president, Teodoro Obiang Mbosogo, he's been in power since 1979, and he only came to power through a military coup that ousted his uncle. So he's about 72 years old now. One wonders what will happen when he passes away. There's no evident successor. So if your main political institutions are in doubt, I'm not sure what you can do in terms of developing your military forces. But I certainly agree with Dirk that OPVs are the way to go, since it's easier to develop the capacity to support these vessels. If they were to acquire a Barroso-class corvette from Brazil and Equatorial Guinea, I'm not really sure they'd have the personnel or the know-how to maintain and operate this vessel successfully. It is interesting, though, to see that other parts of Gulf of Guinea, they're moving a bit more towards a privatization model. The Togolese Navy just has two patrol boats, so when you've got pirate groups being displaced from Nigerian waters, Togo's really struggling to address that. Benin, at least they've got the contract with that Benfort International. So it's possible that there's these private military contractors that can fill the role of a navy and coast guard for these smaller West African states. But I don't really know if Equatorial Guinea can follow that model or if they can really stick to their guns and produce this state-controlled navy, even if it is controlled by a dictatorship.
Now, so the Nigerian navy actually has somewhat, not on purpose, but I guess naturally, part of its police and its military solely privatized their mission. I mean, Dirk presents it as is correct. This is seems like a failure of the system. Do you see this, Paul, as a possible way forward for African navies? If you're buying all this expensive equipment, if you're hiring all these people, instead of hiring PMCs, why not hire yourself out for the security missions you're supposed to conduct?
I have serious reservations with that model. Much like Dirk's, I think, from reading his piece, that that definitely blurs the line between your own military forces and the pirates or organized crime groups that you're presumably fighting against. So I definitely see there being a problem with transparency and accountability if one is privatizing domestic maritime forces, bringing in international contractors that have a good amount of transparency and accountability. That might be a better way forward, like, as mentioned, the Advanfort International. Hopefully I'm not taking a risk by
Advanfort is perhaps the one foreign military contractor or maritime security contractor that absolutely lacks transparency in every respect. And you may or may not be aware that they had a ship detained in India. They are actually sought by warrant by a couple of Indian Ocean countries for not paying bills and smuggling guns in and out of the country. So I don't know whether the much heralded Western contractors are so much better than some of the indigenous contractors.
So, Dirk, what do you think about this whole private / public? Now, use the phrase private public balance. That's sort of like a blasé Western term for something that is completely insane when you look at it on the surface. Going on in Nigeria, like maybe discuss, for those that haven't read the article, a little bit about what's going on in Nigeria and where, if you think this has a place, because it does seem like funding and training becomes an issue in Africa. And, you know, I hate to say it, if the government's funding is that bad, maybe you'd suggest there's a place for this. For folks to be able to actually fund their military.
Yes, if we look at Nigeria, then we have two models of, let's say, private military activity or privatized military activity. One is, plainly illegal and also not productive, as I wrote in my article, and that involves essentially mid-level officers are hiring out their personnel to either private security companies or to shipping companies or oil and gas companies, just in return for day rates, which they usually keep in order to either fund their lifestyle or, in fact, to also fund their units, which very often do not actually receive the budgeted money from the federal government. That's a typical problem that you have in a lot of African countries. That even though you have money that is budgeted for the armed forces, it is not always appropriated because a lot of people collect that money on the way before it trickles down to the units or to wherever it is meant to be spent. The other variant sort of emerged probably around the height of the Niger Delta insurgency, when the Nigerian Navy, for a variety of reasons, proved incapable of actually fielding equipment in order to provide protection to oil and gas facilities in the Niger Delta. And the main problem was the absence of trained personnel and the inability to maintain equipment. So what they did was essentially they entered contracts or private-public partnerships with private companies who would maintain and manage vessels for them, who would provide training and mentoring to the personnel who operate these vessels. And that actually proved to be highly successful. They have a thing called the Bonny River Convoy, which has been running every day since 2008 without fail, and has been highly successful. And that has been pretty much a template for a number of similar programs. And one is the secure anchorage area of Lagos, for instance, where, again, the idea is that the contractors actually also procure the vessels and then ensure that they're properly maintained, managed, that the crew is properly trained, but operational control remains with the Navy. And there is an effort also in ensuring that these constructs are transparent. There are memoranda of understandings that govern these relationships, which are quite clear, and they're identical for every company that enters such a relationship with the Navy. So that is actually, by the standards of the region, a reasonable solution in order to achieve a limited objective, which is to provide some sort of close escort or protection for a small defined area against sort of typical small criminal threats like armed robbery, like piracy, or even illegal activities such as illegal bunkering or fuel theft.
What would each of you consider to be the most... Well, okay, before I get to that question, each of you, if you could, what's your opinion on capability? Dirk, your article on the Obungame Express, I thought, my favorite part was conduct at sea, where it's the difference between the Nigerian, Beninese, and Togolese VBSS teams. And I thought that was a really interesting contrast in capability. Where do you see the development, not in procurement, but developing this capability? So we have in Nigeria a model, you know, it's a somewhat privatized model that involves the providing of training and maintenance. Is there any hope on that capability side? How long is this going to take? They are building these regional partnerships, these C2 kind of combinations to counter maritime crime, to counter piracy. Is this really going to lead the way forward, or is this a different issue? We're not going to see this actually affect the ability of navies to execute the VBSS interdiction mission at sea.
And that's directed at who, this question?
Either one of
them. Paul?
Dirk, you can
take it. Okay, then I'll take it. It's going to be a long process, like I wrote, and that the reason for that is because most of the navies in the region are basically starting from scratch. Even if countries like Togo or Angola have navies on paper, in fact, they have virtually zero capability to operate them, and that's where we are starting. The Nigerian Navy, not for all its faults, I mean, is a functioning navy of sorts, which is deficient, especially in when it comes to command and control, to maritime domain awareness, but it at least has an infrastructure that you can build on. So we're probably going to see different speed solution. The Nigerian Navy, given a political will, will probably evolve more quickly and could potentially become more effective more quickly than navies like the Togolese Navy or the Angolan Navy. And then you have countries who have quite small naval establishments, but who receive a very dedicated support, for instance, by the French, who have a number of programs. And the French are, as opposed to most other countries, actually very persistent when it comes to committing resources for capacity building. If you look at ASECMAR, CRASMAC, and programs like that. So I see some countries like Cameroon and Benin probably occupying sort of the middle ground between Nigeria and the lesser West African nations. They will never have large navies, but they will have small, or they could potentially have small and reasonably effective navies. And a country like Benin is working very hard to get there. But like I said, they are starting from a very, very low level. So we're looking at years, if not decades, to actually achieve a meaningful maritime security capability.
Paul?
Yes. I would just say that, yes, there's definitely a long slog to go, even in terms of developing a regional framework and shared practices. I know there's been a number of conferences over the past year held under the auspices of ECOWAS and ECAS to talk about a code of conduct and other best practices, but it certainly just seems to be a very ad hoc approach, very slow negotiations, and one hopes that maybe they'll be able to develop some strategic agreements so we can start talking about the operational level.
For each of you, because we want to dedicate the 30 minutes here as Paul and I try to figure out how to get to work, and then Dirk figures out how to go home like a bastard, what do you consider to be the most interesting development as you see the progression of these different navies? I mean, because what you're talking about, there's a certain malaise, I suppose, in talking often about Western defense. It's a lot of buzzwords. It's a lot of long-term 5- and 10-year projects and acquisition programs and waiting for LRASM for 80 years, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Despite the problems, there's something far more exciting about reading about African navies. Part of their major problem, everything is ad hoc, is also one of their advantages in being able to solve problems more quickly or acquire systems more quickly based on need. Hey, I'm the Nigerian Navy, and guess what? Boom, I'm buying some American cutters. Boom, done. They buy what already exists. Granted, you know, their governments and their command and control might often be corrupt, but they are afforded a certain level of flexibility. So there's a lot more to go off of. What do you guys see as the most interesting development about African navies? And maybe as an addition to that, what is it that interested you about African navies that brought you along to study them? Paul?
A few questions wrapped up into one, I think, so I'll try to sort through.
I'm sneaky that way.
Don't play tricks with my mind this early in the morning, but basically, I think for me, one of the most interesting things is how the region is going to plug the gaps, especially in the Gulf of Guinea. You've got very strong navies like Ghana and Nigeria, and there's this attempt to shore up the defense of the south of the Gulf of Guinea, especially with the Equatorial Guinea's example. But one wonders, for those states between these strong navies, how will they develop their own capacities like Benin and Togo? That is something I find particularly curious, especially when we speak of the Togolese Navy consisting of two patrol boats. There's a lot of room for expansion there, but not a lot of ingredients with which to do it. So I'm interested to see how they'll deal with the challenges.
And what is it that brought you to look into African navies in particular? Just on a personal level, yeah.
Oh, sure. I think maybe it was just an interest in Africa in general. It's a continent that's rapidly growing. We're hearing talk of maybe the 21st century being the African century. I think that might be a little overly optimistic, but still, I'm very curious
especially based on your guys' comments.
That's true. Well, there's still some room for optimism, just maybe that might be a little bit extreme, but still, I find it interesting in terms of elections in West Africa, but then, of course, military definitely feeds into it, especially when you have regimes like Guinea-Bissau, where it's traditionally been a military dictatorship, so there's a strong coupling of government institutions with the military forces, sometimes not exactly the right way around, where civilian control of the military actually has turned into military control of the civilian population, but it's interesting.
Before, you know what, and I know this is the wrong way to do an interview, but let me pause before moving on to Dirk with that question, and quickly if you can, if there's even a quick answer. Are African navies at a major detriment, specifically because of that connection between the military and the state? Because you have a maritime security issue, but states often, their survival or the existential understanding of the government's own survival, the way it sees itself, is intrinsically connected to a land force, which it sees as defending its existence. Just not necessarily from any particular security threat, but from, let's say, the people or regime change or potential rebellion. Quickly, for both of you, is that a major challenge facing these African navies, or is that something that's maybe slowly becoming a vestige of the past?
I think it's a huge challenge, especially when you look at Ghana, where there is a fairly strong democratic foundation, and so maritime forces are performing fairly well. They're reasonably well-funded when you compare to some other states that are definitely struggling with the whole democracy thing. So I would definitely say that that's a big challenge. It leads to a favoring of land forces for a lot of the reasons that you touched on. It allows a greater degree of control, and they're very cheap and easy to build up if you're just sticking an AK in someone's hands and saying, you know, here's your uniform and I may or may not pay you, but, you know, have fun.
Dirk, sorry for the interruption. That just hit my mind, and I thought it would be a really good question for you guys.
Well, you actually answered most of it yourself. But yes, African navies or African militaries like any other place are reflections of their political systems. And African militaries fulfill two roles. Like you said, one is upholding the regime, domestic security, and they're part of a reward system for the ruling elites, which means that if you maintain a military, then it's not about military effectiveness. Interestingly, especially under military rule, that is where most militaries actually get weaker rather than stronger, because the idea of the reward system is that you staff the military with people who you want to make sure that they can generate an income from their position, because they can hold a post that generates prestige or political influence. And in that respect, navies are really at a double disadvantage, because for the most part, they're not important to regime security and stability. And at least historically, they've had very few positions that led themselves for personal enrichment or for political influence. Now, that's changing as African, or at least West African states, become more aware of the resources offshore, and of course, as the importance of navies increase as a part of ensuring economic security and control of the resources.
And finally, to finish up the question I so rudely interrupted, Dirk, what do you find to be the most interesting development in African navies? And then on a personal level, well, what brought you to be so interested and involved in sort of study? I mean, you went to Obengame Express, which was, again, everybody loved that article. That was a great article. But what kind of brought you into this realm?
I think actually both the answers to those questions are joined at the hip. Like I said, I started working in Nigeria with maritime security 10 years ago. And at that time, navies were just not visible. If they existed, they were not operational, or at least did not contribute in any significant form to maritime security. And I think that the change that we've seen over the past years, over that past decade, sort of belies the usual adage that nothing ever changes in Africa, and it's all hopeless, it's never going to develop. And I think that's really the long-term perspective, or rather the long view of the development is really what struck me, that there has been progress. And I've not been interested in the navies per se, but because of this development, they've simply become a factor in maritime security, which is my field. And they are now in whichever form, either as public-private partnerships or as navies in their own right, like the Ghanaian Navy, for instance, they have become factors in maritime, West African maritime security. Small factors, but increasingly getting bigger.
Well, I want to thank both of you for joining me. Before we go, is there anything that either of you would like to plug? Risk Intelligence is your outfit, Dirk, and Paul, you come from a million different things. I guess you could plug Canada. I mean, if you really want to do that, let everyone know that you guys are up there, and you know, I'm sure you'd like guests.
Yes, we have maple syrup.
It's maple syrup and snow. I hear that the mixture of the two is actually pretty good. But no, in all seriousness, is there anything that, if not your own material, if not your own institutions, books you've been reading recently, anything that you think that our audience should go to? Paul, we'll start with you.
Well, we put out a lot of interesting material at the Center for International Maritime Security, including this podcast. So I obviously strongly recommend that people visit the website. Also, I guess I can plug NATO Council of Canada, which is a partner of the center. So always, of course, check out natocouncil.ca. And there's a lot of great new junior research fellows there who are producing interesting research, including maritime security. I'm really enthused by the fact that we have more material in the Royal Canadian Navy these days. And hopefully that'll make Canadians aware that, yes, we do have three oceans, and we should really be very interested in maritime security.
Absolutely, and that's where everyone can find your article on Equatorial Guinea as well. So definitely head over to the NATO Council of Canada. That's some great resources there. Dirk, is there anything that you would like to plug?
I can really only join Paul in recommending the stuff that's out on SimSec on the page. Just keep an eye open for new articles on African and West African maritime security.
Absolutely. Well, and there we have it, gentlemen. Successfully executed a early morning podcast as Dirk enjoys his lunch. yeah, again, thank you so much for joining me, and it's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Great content from the Center for International Maritime Security. Like the Sea Control podcast, it's at your fingertips. Go to www.cimsec.org. Don't forget to sign up at www.simsec.org/about/membership to get our articles and announcements by email. And hey, if you feel inspired, feel free to write us an article or two, or five. Make sure to check out our partners. Our friends at the Australian Strategic Policy Institute produce the Sea Control Asia Pacific Edition. Our friends at the Phoenix Think Tank produce Sea Control East Atlantic. This and other fine forums can be found on our homepage. Join the discussion.